Hey, it's 34 degrees. We got some snow flurries outside here in Altoona. Let's talk some baseball. Oh, man. Very sad news today with the passing of Hank Aaron, legendary figure at 86 years old. We'll take some more calls here coming up in a bit. Mike Persak from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joins us right now. We're going to talk some Pirates with their off-season moves. They've made some deals, brought in a lot of prospects, and I'm very interested in Mike's thoughts on all of that. We'll get to those in a minute. Mike, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well, Corey. How are you?
Mike, your thoughts whenever you first heard – now, you're a younger guy. What are you, about 25, 27?
Yeah, 24.
When you first
turned 24, actually.
When you first heard today that Hank Aaron had passed, being a younger person, what goes through your mind?
I mean, it's you know, I always had obviously like a great reverence for him, like, you know, all those guys that I never got to like really see play, but are obviously so well regarded. It's like you obviously have great respect for them, and I think Aaron was outsized because of the home run record, you know what I'm saying? And not outsized to say that, like, you know, he didn't warrant it, but I'm saying, like, larger than a lot of guys because of the home run record, because it was such a big deal. When I was growing up, when Bonds broke it, he was held up as, you know, obviously such a great character in the game, such a great player, first and foremost, but then afterwards, such a great, you know, human being and everything he stood for. So, obviously, it's sad news. Everyone's kind of in mourning, but I've tried to take a role of, like, you know, I don't have many stories or anything really much to share, but it's been really cool looking at everyone else's stories and different ways that he's impacted different people. I think it's been you know, that's I guess the silver lining of today. Obviously, sad news.
The best story I saw today was Hank Aaron on with David Letterman in the early 80s. There's a video out there. It's a minute and a half, guys. And he got a call from Richard Nixon during the game after he broke the home run record. He got a phone call, and he tells the story of the guy running down the left field line while Hank's playing left field because Richard Nixon wants to talk to him on the phone during the game. And Hank says, well, I got to wait till after this inning. So then he says, Richard Nixon invites Hank Aaron and his wife to the White House for a visit. And Hank Aaron says, well, how soon would you like me to come? And remember, folks, this is 1974. if you know the history and you know the math, and Richard Nixon tells him, well, as soon as you can, and Hank said, I didn't make it in time because Richard Nixon resigned. So just a tremendous story. Again, that video is out there with Hank Aaron on with David Letterman. Mike Persak from the Post-Gazette joined us. The question then becomes, who is baseball's home run king? I'm 47. I grew up with what 755 meant. 755 was one of the great records in sports history. It was etched in everybody's brain who loved baseball. And so I asked the question a few minutes ago, how many people even know how many home runs Barry Bonds had? They know that he broke the record, but I had to double check. I thought I knew. Actually, I was one off. I thought it was 763, but it's 762. So I'll ask you in your mind, and use whatever criteria you like, as a 24-year-old person, as opposed to somebody older who maybe grew up with Hank Aaron a little bit more, who's the home run king in your mind?
I mean, to me, it's Bonds, just because, like, I mean, I was saying to you before we came on, like, I remember all the hullabaloo, I guess, around him, you know, going to break it, and I remember ESPN like flashing away from whatever program every time he got up to bat. And I remember staying up late because obviously they were playing on the West Coast, and you know, I was growing up in Michigan, so I remember staying up late to watch his at bats. And when he finally broke it in San Francisco with the, you know, the call and deep to right center and all that, and everybody fighting for the ball, like that is one of like the baseball memories that's kind of etched into my brain. So like to me, that's how I think of it. I think it's like a I'm not too naive to realize that there are very valid reasons that people would think of Aaron as the home run king over Bonds. But to me, I think it is like a little bit of a generational gap, like that I view Bonds as it. But, you know, like I said, there are a lot of asterisks there. I think the problem too with me is that like the asterisk with steroids is like that taints my entire childhood of like all the great home run hitters. Like that era was when everyone was using it. So like, you know, I loved Sammy Sosa when I was growing up. Like, he was my favorite hitter. And, like, you know, know, I can't really change that, even if any of those records are tainted. It's like, that's still kind of what it is in my mind.
So, it's great.
Yeah, like I said, to me, it's Bonds. That's just, you know, I get why people would say Aaron or not want to include Bonds. Yeah.
I grew up as a huge Chicago Cubs fan. I was actually covering a series between the Cubs and the Braves in July of 1998. Well, in June of 1998, Sammy Sosa hit 20 home runs, which is a major league record for a month. And I remember seeing Sammy for the first time up close and personal in the clubhouse in Atlanta, and his head was about four times the size of a normal person's head. That memory still sticks with me because, hey, I enjoyed all those home runs, but, man, he was – and I never got to see Barry Bonds in person after all this stuff, but I saw Sammy, and, right. And it was pretty wild. But here's my memory of Bonds is I told Mike this off the air. Okay, whatever he was taking, fine, and the numbers, you know, you got to put an asterisk. But for a 5 or 6 year period there, man, I don't remember Barry Bonds, like, swinging at a ball, like, ever.
Yep.
He would just get up there, and he would be locked in for a pitch in a certain spot, and if you didn't throw it in that spot, he didn't swing, and he would take his walk, and he'd walk with the bases loaded. And then if you threw him a strike, he would crush it. Now, he might crush it foul, or he might hit a screaming liner at somebody, or he might fly out to the warning track, or he was going to hit a home run. I mean, it seemed like for a 5 or 6 year period, basically 90% of the balls that Barry Bonds hit, he just absolutely destroyed.
Right. And you know how, you know, I'm sure it's like this with you know, every legend, and it would be like this with the guys that played with Hank Aaron or Willie Mays, but the guys who played with Bonds, you'll hear interviews where they'll talk about, like, just that, like, his work ethic to, like, build up his eye, where he would, like, I've heard stories before where he would, like, stand in the batter's box during like, bullpen sessions for pitchers without a bat and just watch pitches, just get that down where, like, he knew exactly what was a ball and a strike. And you know, you're exactly right. And what I mentioned earlier with ESPN, like, cutting away from programming to show his at-bats, a lot of times it was anticlimactic because, like, you know, it'd go to him and it'd be like he could break the record or he could tie the record right here. And it'd be like a 5-pitch walk where he fouls off the ball or something. It's like, all right, well, maybe next time, like, I'll stay here for the next hour and hope that he comes up again.
But
I remember the same things. And I you know, he was just so revered. And you know, so obviously so was Aaron. Like, it's just, you know, obviously today it's just such a bummer in that sense.
Yeah. And you'll read people writing all over the place that Hank Aaron was a better person than he was a baseball player, which is saying a lot. All right, good discussion there. Mike Persak from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I want to talk with Mike about the Pirates. He covers the Buccos. A lot of movement this offseason, trading Josh Bell, trading Joe Musgrove. Mike, explain to people who maybe haven't fully been paying attention or they're just saying, nah, that's just the Pirates getting rid of older guys or guys who are going to make money or will sign contracts. Why have the Pirates made some of the moves that they've made?
In my mind, I think it's just a realization of where they are as an organization. Like, you know, they had the worst record in Major League Baseball with Josh Bell and Joe Musgrove last year. They aren't really in the position to, you know, quote unquote, go for it to sign a bunch of, you know, great free agents and try to win a World Series this year. Like, it's just the reality of things. They just aren't. They don't have the talent right now. And Ben Cherington has said as much, not necessarily on the major league level, that he doesn't think they have the talent, but more in the sense that he said right from the start that they need to build up the base of talent in the minor leagues. And so that's what they're trying to do. And so they're you know, trading away guys who are tradable. They're mixing it up. More than, like, almost half of the roster from last year has been turned over. So, you know, they're going to go with a younger look, try to get some of their prospects up into the majors and you know, get them developed to where they can contribute in 2 or 3 years, hopefully, and you know, go for it then. And we'll see how it works out. I think so far it's a strong start. I think getting the return they did for Joe Musgrove, it was, you know, I think about the quality that most people expected, maybe more players than they expected. They got five prospects in return for Joe Musgrove. And so, you know, they're just trying. They're trying to build it up. They're trying, as I put it before, they're trying to, you know, put as many arrows in the quiver so that, you know, obviously some prospects don't hit all the time. So if you just have more prospects that are on that level, then you have a better chance of hitting on the proper percentage to build a competitive major league team in a few years.
So hear what Mike said. They got five prospects for Joe Musgrove. Now, Joe Musgrove is a nice, decent major league pitcher. I'm going to pull up to see exactly what his WAR was last year. Decent major league. But if you can get five guys, if two of those pan out, you've won. The Josh Bell situation, was there any chance that Josh Bell was going to re-sign with the Pirates? By the way, Joe Musgrove's WAR was 0.5 last year, so slightly above replacement. Was there any chance the Pirates would have been able to keep Josh Bell long-term, even if they'd wanted to?
You know, maybe. It's always so hard, right, because there's a chance that when his contract ran up, some of those young guys had come up. It's conceivable that Bell could have stayed around if he liked Pittsburgh, if he liked the role he had, if he had a bounce-back season. But you know, that's the other side of it, is that he struggled last year, and so many of the Pirates hitters did. But he struggled last year. He wasn't the same Josh Bell that he was in 2019, where, you know, everyone kind of fell in love with his game, where he's hitting all those home runs. So, you know, the question is whether or not you think he's going to bounce back from that, and if he bounces back from that, to what extent does he bounce back from it, and how long is that sustainable? So I think that's a question that they had to ask, and obviously they felt that you know, maybe he can bounce back, but that he wasn't a part of their larger long-term future. And that's the calculus you have to, you know, make with all these guys, with everyone on the roster, and you have to decide, like, what your window is and who's going to be around to help or who has more value for you if you trade them away and get back a prospect who is younger or, you know, has more potential or whatever. So you know, it's hard to say. Like, obviously there's a scenario where he would have signed back with them, but it's hard to say for sure that, like, he would have been a huge part of a team in 2025 that might be competing, you know what I'm saying?
And here's what's interesting. I'm real happy, actually, that Pirates fans got to enjoy 2013, 14, and 15 with the playoff runs, because it was at least something to hang your hat on. Mike, for years and years, all I ever heard was from Pirates fans during the 20-year losing streak was, they'll never be good again. You know, Sid Bream broke their heart. They still cry whenever Sid scored in 92 in the NLCS for the Braves. And so it was just this constant woe is us for a long, long time of just some terrible baseball. At least the Pirates got to enjoy the three good years, because I think it's going to be a long time before they get back to that point. They were 19-41 last year. You're trading away Josh Bell. You're trading away Joe Musgrove. Even if some of these prospects do pan out, that's 2 to 3 years down the road. So what would you tell Pirates fans in terms of being patient? Again, you got to enjoy three straight playoff years, including 98 wins in 2015, and I know it fell apart after that in a hurry, but how much longer are Pirates fans going to have to wait before they're even in position for any kind of window of opportunity like that?
I would say you need to, you know, if you're really itching for good baseball in the Pirates organization, you need to subscribe to the MILB TV package. You need to turn on those AA and AAA games and get excited about some 19 and 20-year-olds.
Come on out to the Altoona Curve. Come out to People's Natural Gas Field and enjoy the Altoona Curve this summer. Knock on wood. Hopefully we have an Altoona Curve this summer.
Yeah, right. No, but, you know, to be completely serious, it's hard to say, right? Like prospects, you can look at, and this is the dangerous thing with prospects, is you can pull up the Pirates top 30 prospects page on MLB.com, and you can scroll down and you can look at, they have an ETA right there where it's like, this guy is supposed to make it to the majors at this time. And you can go down and you can imagine, like, these names. You can imagine Nick Gonzalez and Brian Hayes and O'Neill Cruz all making it at the same time and getting this point. But some of these guys are going to miss. Like, that's just the nature of prospects. It's not a perfect projection. But in my mind, with the way the Pirates are currently set up, and I imagine there are probably going to be more trades in the future, and there's going to be more prospects added to the list. With what the Pirates currently have, I think the most optimistic, like, you can look at it and imagine them being decently competitive in 2023 or 2024. Like, to me, it's 3 or 4 years when these prospects come up, and you already have gotten a taste of it with T. Brian Hayes, and if anyone can be a shadow of what he showed last season, then you can start building a competitive roster. And you know, part of it, too, is like, we'll see how everything pans out, but if Brian Reynolds turns it around in the outfield, he's still young. Like, he can still be a piece of the future. You know, there are guys still on the roster. Mitch Keller is another one that with guys who you can watch and you can see them develop and you can imagine them being a part of a winning team.
Yes.
They're still young and still part of the future. So, you know, it's going to be hard for this year. Like, I don't expect them to be a very competitive team this year. I don't know if, you know, if they're being completely honest, I don't know if the front office of the Pirates think it's going to be a super competitive team this year. But, it's all part of, like, the process, you know, and it sucks because it's been so long. And you know, to go on a little bit of a tangent, like, that's part of the problem with the post-2015 Pirates up until, like, now when they're finally, like, really selling, is that when you're riding the middle line and you're trying to win with a roster that really can't, that isn't quite there, like, it just prolongs the process. It just drags things out, and people start to lose patience where it's like, you know, well, what are we even doing here? Like, even the Archer trade in 2018, it's like, you know, they were trying to win, but it just wasn't good. Like, you had to, they had to rebuild. Like, you have to look yourself in the mirror and realize when it's time to rebuild, realize where you really stand.
Right.
And at least now they're finally doing it, but it's probably years after they could have started. And so I understand why people's patience is worn thin at this point.
Yeah, Neil Huntington had no intention of rebuilding. They tried to, you know, and this is commendable to a degree, but it's lacking reality. They tried to be as good as they could every year, but it wasn't realistic.
Yeah.
And everything Mike said is absolutely right. Everything he said, I agree with you around 2023. You know, that's a time we can start to look forward to. But here's the reality. In 2023 and 2024, you're going to be looking at Ke'Bryan Hayes and Mitch Keller and Brian Reynolds and all those guys possibly being free agents soon themselves again. And then you just start the process all over again because the Pirates won't have enough money to pay them. I worked for a nutting newspaper for 21 years. I always had to give the asterisk or the disclaimer that I worked for a nutting newspaper and I couldn't be too overly critical of them. Well, I don't work for a nutting newspaper anymore. They're cheap. They're not going to pay money to pay these guys in free agency. So everything Mike said is right. But if the plan goes perfectly and they're in position in 2023, 2024, you're still going to have a small window of opportunity because when those guys get to the point where they can make $100, $150 million, they're not going to be in Pittsburgh any longer. And then you just reset. You hit the reset button, and everything that we're talking about today, we'll be talking about again in 2025, and then we'll be talking about it again in 2030, and then we'll be talking about it again in 2035, because as long as this ownership group is in charge, Mike, that this is just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take your word for it. I think, you know, the way I see it is that you have to prove that it's worth spending money on, right? Like, this core has to grow up and be what they think it can be. Like, if there's value in buying into it, then you know, I'll judge it when I can. You know, the way I see it is that I understand people's frustrations, and I understand, especially after 2015 and the way that everything panned out with who got paid and who didn't. Like, I get it. I understand why people are upset about it. But to me, like, this currently isn't a team worth spending money on, the roster right now. Like, it's not worth bringing in a free agent and trying to go after, you know, Trevor Bauer or whatever. If it's still the same way when these guys do grow up, if you have a good core and you still don't spend to supplement the team, then I think it's really fair to judge that and be like, well, you know what, you know, they're never going to compete if they won't spend money. Like, then I think it's fair. But as of right now, I think, you know, you used the word earlier, and it's patience, and it stinks. I imagine as a fan, it really stinks to just sit and be patient and understand that they're going to lose games in the process and not know if that process is really going to pay off into anything. But I think it's really all you can do right now.
Yeah, sure.
I hope that in 3 or 4 years or 2 or 3 years or however long it takes, that they're willing to spend money and that this core group of young guys can turn into something that's worth spending money on.
And that's why, like I said, I'm happy Pirates fans got to enjoy 2013, 14, and 15 because we're not still sitting here in 2021 looking back at 1992 as the last good team. That is important. Real quick before we let you go, I apologize for keeping you so long, but I've got to ask, Mike's a Michigan guy. You're a Detroit Lions fan, are you not?
I am, yeah.
What the holy hell was that coach doing yesterday? I'm going to play the clip here in a minute. But he's talking about biting guys' kneecaps and pulling their teeth out and stuff. I mean, the Detroit Lions hired a new football coach yesterday, and he sounded insane, Mike. Well, you as a Lions fan, are you fired up by this or are you scared by this?
I'm both. I tuned in to the opening press conference yesterday. You know, they're streaming it on YouTube. And I was watching kind of passively. I was doing something else. And I realized, like, after, like, 15 minutes, I was like, did he ever get asked a question? And the answer was no. He spent 19 minutes just talking.
Oh, my goodness.
Going off about it. The first 19 minutes was his opening statement. Nobody asked a single question for 19 minutes. And he ended up going, like, an hour plus. But, yeah, I mean, I'm both scared and encouraged. I think, you know, if the players buy into this attitude, then it could be something. But there's also, you know, the fear. Like, he's never called plays. Like, he's the defensive coordinator he hired has also never called plays. Like, you know, maybe these guys can figure it out, but it's a little bit – there's a few red flags, but, like, I'm willing to buy in, like, blindly and just, like, I don't know. Hopefully it works, you know?
That's great, man. I appreciate it. Like I said, I apologize for keeping you so long, but a lot of great discussions, buddy. I really appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Good